This.
Hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing?
Is Felger and Mads.
What?
On 98.5.
Unbelievable.
The Sports Hub.
Where's this from, Jimmy? To proper credit.
I think it's his podcast, right?
His podcast.
The Michael Lombardi podcast.
And The Ringer, yeah.
Where this comes from. And he's asked about Johnny Manziel in general and Johnny Manziel and the New England Patriots. Go ahead and run cut one there, Jimmy.
To me, the risk has to be low enough to where the reward is great. And if you do your due diligence, you bring him in. We did. When I was in New England, he came in the same time as Jimmy Garoppolo. They came in the same exact time. They spent the same exact amount of time together. They went over the tape. They went through the same procedures that each of them did. And Manziel was really good on his visit. Now, he's going on to have a lot of problems and a lot of complications afterwards. But I think you have to be able to look at your team and say, we're giving this guy a second chance. And, you know, once he screws up, he's out of here. I think somebody's going to give – this league is too desperate for quarterbacks mm-hmm. not to give this guy a second chance. And if he proves what he's saying is real, you know, like if he said, hey, in 60 days, we're going to come back, we'll drug test you, do whatever, and he's clean, he's done it, then I think he'll get a second chance.
Did you know Johnny Manziel was here for a visit the draft of 2014?
Not that I remember.
Jim Louth is down here as our engineer. Jim Louth knows everything, remembers everything, tracks – Jim, did you know that Johnny Manziel was here for a here at Gillette for a pre-draft visit in 2014?
No idea.
Doesn't that – I go back there and say, boy, they were serious about Brady and decline in 2014 and getting the next guy. They brought in Johnny Manziel. Forget Jimmy Garoppolo, like a second-round flyer, which isn't really even a flyer. They brought in Manziel.
Right.
They were looking at quarterbacks in 2014.
Oh, yeah, no question. Look, I remember we had some discussion about it, and there was a chance that Manziel...
And I'm sorry, just let me say, I mean, I know that, like, that's the master of the obvious kind of statement, but the fact that they brought in Manziel, too, doesn't that...
Well, it just proves that Garoppolo wasn't just, hey, you know, best on our board right now, or a flyer.
No,
they were looking at quarterbacks.
They were targeting quarterbacks in 14. Belichick thought Brady was on the slide, was coming down, they had to get the next guy, and now was the time to do it. Bill was 100% right in terms of... Well, just well, I mean, let me say this, because Brady turned it around and went the other way. But it was the smartest thing to do because he got the most out of Brady by doing that. But what that cut tells me before we get to the Manziel thing, which is the mindset of the team in 2014, they brought in – that's how serious they were to look at quarterbacks and how Bill felt about Brady at the time, that he brought in Johnny Manziel.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. Don't you remember there were rumors at that time that – had Bortles slid, because there was uncertainty about how high Bortles was going to go, that he might end up here, that they were going to take Bortles?
Someone reported it, that Bortles was actually the highest quarterback on their board.
So, like, you know, all of that to me was, it was clear they were going to take a quarterback in that draft. Hell, we threw markers at quarterbacks on the draft, on the Felger and Mazz big board.
And we hit Manziel and Bortles.
We hit Garoppolo and Bortles.
I mean, Garoppolo and Bortles. We hit Garoppolo and Bortles, exactly.
Yeah, we hit Garoppolo. And so, like, you know, to me... The fact that they had Manziel here, though, tells me they were serious about Manziel.
So that's my first takeaway. Like, well, they were serious about Manziel, but it really speaks about what Belichick thought about Brady at that time. He thought the end was near, and it was time to start planning for the next guy. And, you know, Brady won. Brady shut him up. Brady proved him wrong. Brady went the other way. But it backs us a little bit because we've been on the Brady in decline, with the Brady in decline show for a long time. You know, I'm sorry, Zoe and Louthy. Belichick agreed. He agreed because he was bringing in that next guy.
Hell, we were 4 years ahead of Belichick.
So Bill Belichick agreed with us that there was that ever so slight slippage in Brady, and he saw it coming, and he felt that year was the year to strike, to the point where he brought in Johnny Manziel, who even then, before his big problems, was still toxic is the wrong word, but, you know, a big concern. He was Johnny Football, right, with the stupid hand thing, you know, all that stuff. And he was, I think, you know, the Vegas stuff. And, you know, to bring in a guy like that is a next level. If we had known at the time that they had brought in Johnny Manziel, oh, damn it. Too bad we didn't know.
They also apparently brought in Ted Bridgewater in 14.
I'm sorry. So everyone's talking at once. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Apparently they also brought in Teddy Bridgewater in 14.
Did we know that, Laufey?
I didn't know that.
They brought in Bridgewater, too.
I mean, like, I remember them. Didn't they have Tebow in the North End or something? Remember that?
Well, that was in 2013.
Right. I'm just saying, but I don't remember any of this other stuff.
Was that his draft year? whatever.
Yeah, but like little things like that, I don't remember anything about Manziel, Bridgewater, any of that.
They kept under wraps because they know if we get that information that they bring in Manziel, they're bringing in Bridgewater. Never mind Garoppolo. Like, we would have looked at Garoppolo and said, well, we don't know who this guy is. Who cares? They're just bringing in some guy. And that's not a story. But if we knew that they were bringing in Bridgewater, who was supposed to be a first-round guy, but especially Johnny Manziel, do you know what we do with that information?
Oh, yeah, no, we go crazy.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. We have a history of being conservative with that sort of thing.
So good job for them. But now, even knowing it now, I go back and say, boy, they really were on Brady at that time.
I don't think they were wrong. Again, and I'm just giving you the numbers, but the passer rating and the completion percentage went down three straight years. His rating in 2013 was in the 80s.
Okay, so
just like that you're mad because you got take cheated.
I did, and we got take cheated. We got take slighted. That was what material we could have had at the time. Good God. Dang it. So anyway. But we can still wait. We always reserve the right to circle back. Good job, Jimmy. Teddy Bridgewater and Johnny Manziel were brought in that year. They were looking at quarterbacks. Nice. All right. So, never mind. Manziel came here, and according to Mike Lombardi, had a good visit, did everything Garoppolo did, and maybe, you know, well, Manziel didn't last, so they, you know, he was never in the Patriots' radar, but did they like him? Did they like him as much as Garoppolo? I mean, Lombardi kind of sort of implied that. There's another Lombardi cut here on this topic. Go ahead, Jimmy.
You know, to me, I think he could operate. Could he operate in a New England system? Yeah, without a doubt. Could he give a team a dimension? Sure. I think if he's clean, he's worth it. I don't think what happened to him, people are comparing he and Baker Mayfield together. Mm-hmm. They're talking about his character. I don't think what happened to him in Cleveland was he couldn't play football. I think what happened to him in Cleveland was he had issues off the field that affected him from playing football. If you remove those issues from affecting him to play football, I think it's a smart thing to do. If you can understand what you're getting into, that's part of the huge thing you got to do with Johnny Manziel. You got to understand what we're getting into, spend time with them, be around them, and then you're going to have to handle the media attention that's going to come with it. Because mm-hmm. let's face it, Manziel signs with an NFL team. You know, here's Sal Palantonio is going to be at their door.
Yeah, it's the Tebow thing.
It's a Tebow thing.
Okay, so just his tone, he thinks Manziel works. He thinks Manziel, you know, to me, it just feels like it was the off-field stuff that got in the way of him being a good pro, and, you know, who knows, maybe influenced the Patriots back then, but it was really more about draft position. I mean, where'd he go? It was like 13 overall, wasn't
22nd,
it?
I think.
Oh, it was down there, but either way.
But it was first round. The Patriots never had a crack at him.
Right. Well, the Pats, well, okay. The Pats were in the high 20s. I can't remember if that's a year they had lost a pick or not, but either way. The whole tonality from Lombardi there is that he came in, the Pats liked him, he can play, he's a benefit to you, it's all just the off-field stuff. And again, Lombardi was here for a long time. He's Bill's guy. Does that lead you more to believe that Manziel could really be in the Patriots' plans here this offseason? It's a legit option.
I mean, to have this guy talking about him, I mean, I always feel like when he's talking, it's almost like a mouthpiece for Bill. So, yeah, I take it seriously.
Oh, to me, absolutely.
No, and I'm happy to hear because I think that there is talent there, and it sounds like or seems like that Manziel is going to be committed to actually trying to, you know, keep his nose clean and get a second chance here.
And again, I'm not even worried about that because if he doesn't, he's gone. It's like, to me, that's almost a non-problem. The off-field stuff and the drug problems or whatever he's got.
The first hint of it, you're out.
He's gone. So it's not like they have to deal with Johnny Manziel and that problem or even necessarily manage it. It's like one strike and you're out.
No, that's their leverage on him. Yeah, that's their leverage on him. And I looked up that draft. He did go 22nd. The Browns had an earlier first-rounder where they took a defensive back. The Patriots had number 29 and took Dominique Easley.
Okay,
because they went seven picks later.
So my point is that if they really love Manziel, they could have traded up seven picks in the bottom of the first round and gotten him.
Sure.
So they were in range for him, but that's good that I to clarify that. But either way, to me, it's not an off-field thing at all. Like, to me, it's as weird as that is with Manziel, like, it's like a non-factor. I don't think the guy can play in the league. I don't. I feels like too much of a college quarterback, too much of a run-around guy. I don't like the size. You know those things. And that's what's going to ultimately, I think, determine whether he can play or not. But, I don't know, the more you hear, I mean, Lombardi sure ain't poo-pooing that. If anything, he's sort of endorsing the kid. He's just saying his issues were off the field. So,
And with the size,
here comes Johnny Football.
He's taller than Russell Wilson. He's listed, I think, at 6'1". Russell Wilson's 5'11". So, I mean, and Russell Wilson's won a damn Super Bowl, almost won another one. So, I don't know. I don't get too caught up
Russell
in the size
Wilson,
thing.
But what, go ahead, blows him away in makeup.
In intangibles and makeup, blows him away.
Yeah,
exactly right.
Blows him out of the water. But this, to me, is exactly why you would bring this guy in. Because you have Belichick. The kid's desperate if he wants to play, and you sit there and say, if you want to play, if you want to commit, we believe you can play, but you have to commit. We believed that 4 years ago.
Boy, did, yeah. I'm sorry, finish.
No, so I just think, honestly, when I hear this thing today, they're going to get him. He's coming here. They're going to get me, and if you're Manziel and you have to pick, and this is your last chance, who do you want it to be with? I would want Belichick.
Didn't Bridgewater go the last pick of the first round? Didn't he go 32?
He did. He went 32nd.
So you had a crack at Bridgewater. You may not have liked his visit. But you were, you know, so I mean, to me, that's still a takeaway. So if you want to rag on us or anyone for doubting Tom Brady, we'll put Belichick on the list because I think he was right there next to you.
Tugger Mass, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
To me, the risk has to be low enough to where the reward is great. And if you do your due diligence, you bring him in. We did. When I was in New England, he came in the same time as Jimmy Garoppolo. They came in the same exact time. They spent the same exact amount of time together. They went over the tape. They went through the same procedures that each of them did. And Manziel was really good on his visit. Now, he's going on to have a lot of problems and a lot of complications afterwards. But I think you have to be able to look at your team and say, we're giving this guy a second chance. And, you know, once he screws up, he's out of here.
They wanted a quarterback in 2014. Bill thought Brady was on the road to done. That, to me, is the takeaway. But Manziel, still take him now. Sure, I don't think he's going to amount to anything. I don't think he's going to be an NFL quarterback. But take that chance. Why not? All right, so that Red Sox stuff, Celtic stuff on the board to you right here. Angelo and Everett has been waiting patiently to talk about Johnny Manziel. Go ahead, Angelo.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
I think that Johnny Manziel is a no-brainer. Okay, you look at this guy. Tom Brady, I say he plays two more years. You bring Manziel in a two-year deal, low risk, high reward. You draft a quarterback in the draft, and there's your possible quarterback over the next 5 to 6 years. I just think it's a no-brainer for Bill Belichick.
Okay, well, it's a no-brainer. I mean, you know why 2 years? Why you give him nothing? You give him a one-year nothing deal. And Maz made a good point yesterday. Manziel offers, you know, if you go draft a quarterback, he and Manziel, that's a nice little competition there between those guys.
Yeah, you want whoever the guy you're going to draft is, because I don't think it's an either or. Like, I don't think you sign Manziel and then not draft a quarterback. I think you do both. And then whoever the new guy is, and I mean the draft pick, now you get Johnny Manziel looking over your shoulder. Like, even if it's just a name, you can't get too comfortable, and it works in their favor. Create competition.
Joe in Los Angeles has a Red Sox thought. Go ahead, Joe.
Hello?
Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? How you
good,
doing,
you
Mike and Maz and Jim?
Joe, what do you got?
Listen, I moved to Los Angeles after college, and I've been fighting the Lakers and Dodgers fans for 45 years. And here's what a big problem is. They're going to give the Dodgers a special a ring ceremony on Saturday for winning the division. How stupid is that?
That sounds pretty bad. That sounds pretty bad. I don't know if we have a further comment than that, but thanks for the update. Sean in Hingham on the Sox. Hi, Sean.
Hi. So your point about Pedroia, you thought he would be the leader going into last year. I thought the same exact thing. Do you think that can stem from the Machado situation? Wasn't that pretty early in the season? Maybe guys after that were like, we don't want to, you know, have this guy be the spokesperson for the team if he's going to throw the whole team under the bus when we're trying to defend him. Screw this guy.
Yeah, I think that's possible, but what I think the Machado thing just showed is that Pedroia is just not that kind of guy in the first place.
He's not suited for it. And look, I you know, it sounds like you're ripping him, and to some degree, I guess we are. I wasn't surprised by it because I know how he is. He wants to show up, play, and not deal with the rest of it. And in a lot of ways, it's one of his strengths as a player. But a guy who's going to lead has got to be able to do more than that, and he's not that kind of guy.
Chris in California with the Sox thought. Go ahead, Chris.
Hey, Felger. Hey, not sure if you or Maz caught John Farrell's bitterness last night on MLB Tonight, picking the Sox to finish behind Houston, Cleveland, and the Yankees in the AL. Completely agree with the Astros picks, no-brainer. even Cleveland with the pitching rotation, but the Yankees specifically, that lineup times, they will be nasty, but if you look at the aggregate from home run to strikeout rate, it will be feast or famine at certain stretches of the season. Not sure I'm ready to, you know, to crown them with the rest of the baseball pundits just yet.
You know, to say that, you know, Farrell picking the Yankees over the Red Sox, like that's some sort of vendetta, if that's what you're implying, is I think a lot of people have the Yankees over the Red Sox.
I do.
Okay. And we can run this now. Jim Louth, do me a favor. Would you please put us back on our feed? Because I have to see this. Folks, this is embarrassing. I mean, you are not going to believe what you're about to see.
The caller, that guy Sean, picked a bad time to call about the Yankees.
If you're watching NBC Sports Boston, you will see this. I'm going to describe it to you if you're listening on 98.5 The Sports Hub on the FM dial. And that is, well, what happened in Toronto today, the Yankees came up to bat in the first inning with a runner on and Giancarlo Stanton at the plate. Maz is watching on his app, on his computer.
On my tablet, yeah.
And go ahead, NBC Sports Boston, just roll the video. My monitor has a little bit of a delay, so it's going to take a second here for me to see exactly what's happening. But what did Giancarlo Stanton do, Maz?
On an 0-1 pitch, down middle in, he absolutely hit a rocket over the wall in right center field for a home run. Not in his first at-bat as a member of the Yankees, on his first swing as a member of the Yankees.
And right now you're watching Maz's reaction in the studio. I'm reading a commercial, and this is at the commercial break, and this is, I'm finishing up talking about Blue Apron. And if you're watching on NBC Sports Boston, you are embarrassing, dude. Well, what is the matter with you? Seriously.
I told you this was the guy. It was so blatantly obvious. He's the guy. He's a...
What is the matter with you?
He's a different kind of cat. He's a game changer, man. I'm telling you. It was so obvious. And this one is going to hang over the heads of the Red Sox for I don't know how many years.
Just keep rolling it out there in Burlington. Just keep rolling this. This is unbelievable. I'm trying to read a commercial. I'm trying to service the sponsors. And would you look at what Maz is doing?
He's having his own personal dance party.
Oh, my God. Look at that. You are an embarrassment. You really are. So that's what happened. Stanton homered in his first pitch. First pitch.
Second pitch, first swing. He was down 0-1 in the count and hit an absolute freaking scud missile over the wall in right center field.
Back to the phones.
It was an absolute pee that he hit into the seats.
Tommy and Milton. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hi, Mike. Listen, give me a couple extra seconds. I'd really appreciate it. First of all, I'm glad you had the balls enough to speak up about the Nesson broadcasters. Mike, I've been sick of them all year long.
I don't want to rag on them too much. It's just getting a little homerific for me, Tommy. That's all.
You know, it's just and you know what, Mike? Brickley used to be objective. He's no longer objective. And you know, if they stub their toe on the way to the bench, it's a penalty against the other team, and it's just so bloody outrageous. It almost makes me want to shut the sound off completely. So thank you, Mike, for that. I really appreciate it. I think I was the only one who was going screwy, so you said the right thing.
And okay, babe, what else?
Mike, OBJ, if you don't get rid of Cooks, I don't see any need to bring in Odell Beckham Jr. And I think you're right about talking Greg Bedard talking about Gronkowski. I think if he's looking for more money, I think Bedard is right. I think they're going to trade him.
Okay. Belichick would. The organization is not going to show Rob Grant. There's no way, after they got burned like they did on Garoppolo, that they're going to sell low on Gronkowski for, you know, other than a king's ransom. And, you know, Kraft is not going to subject his organization to more ridicule on you traded Gronkowski for what? You know, first of all, you traded Gronkowski at all, the greatest tight end of all time, and Brady's still here? It's not going to happen, even if Brady Belichick wants to do it. It ain't going to happen.
I just don't think you can justify it to Brady. Again, if I'm Brady, and after all this, you're giving me grief on my trainer, for crying out loud. You're going to trade away Gronk, the best red zone target in football? You are going to trade... If I'm Brady and they trade Gronk, I retire. I'm out. See you later.
Dan in Rhode Island on Manziel. You want him, Dan?
Yeah, I say blame. If it doesn't work, you know, we can blame the whole thing on him. Anyway, but I actually have two questions. I need 10 seconds. First of all, how can how is it possible with all the moles that you guys, you and Maz and Murray, all the people you have out in the Boston sports talk sphere, how could we have not known that Johnny Manziel was here?
First, I know, I'm pissed. I'm pissed. I agree, Dan.
Second of all, specifically from you, Felger, I need an update on the Chinese satellite that's going to kill us all. Thanks a lot.
So apparently that's we'll do that tomorrow. That's a Friday topic.
Dad, just quickly, I read up on this yesterday. March 30th to April 2nd is when it's supposed to hit. Maybe tomorrow, over the weekend.
March 30th.
Yep. And New York and New Jersey are in the strike zone.
As is Boston.
Yeah. Well, I'm personally hoping for New Jersey.
Let you stop with that. That's not nice. No, I'll give you a full rundown of the Chinese space station that's careening towards Earth, and no one knows where or when it's going to hit. But apparently it's not today, but it might be, for all these jackals know. Vinny out in Burlington, just keep running that video. Whatever we're talking about today, just keep running that.
I'll tell you what, there's a chance that ball that Giancarlo Stanton hit could take out the space station, so don't worry. What a rocket.
Joe is calling us on the Celtics and Al Horford. Go ahead, Joe. What do you got?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Mike and Jim, I met you guys in Minnesota. It was great to talk to you and see that you're not the total dinks you come across as sometimes.
Thank you, I think. Like, I don't know how to take that exactly, but thank you.
So I wanted to say, I hear all this talk, like, you guys know that I'm not a Celtics homer. I have season tickets, but I'll keep it real. Jaylen Brown can't go to his left. He's overrated by people around here. And Al Horford, the whole thing about he's a winning player. He gets all these assists. I don't care about your assists. You're a big man. You're not supposed to get assists. So everyone's surprised you get assists. Last year, everyone was like, oh, Avery Bradley gets all these rebounds. He's one of the best rebounding guards. Oh, Al Horford gets all these assists. Yeah, that's the opposite of what they're supposed to do. Al Horford's supposed to be a big man. When he goes up against DeAndre Jordan, who's not that good, he gets dominated. So I'm just sick of people saying, like, oh, Al Horford, he one of my buddies at work is like, Al Horford, he's on winning teams all the time. He won the championship in college. Yeah, what has he won in the NBA? He's an all-star, and he didn't even deserve it this year. Like, he's trash. He's overpaid by about $10 to $15 million a year, and we probably will never win anything with him. We'll probably go to the finals this year and lose in 5 or 6. And just a note, I saw Gordon Hayward recently. Looks great. He's tall as Jack and the Beanstalk, and I think the Celts are going to go to the finals, and I think it's going to be all about the young kids, just like the Bruins.
Okay. Well, I mean, you confused me. You spent the first minute bashing the crap out of the team, which I enjoyed. Don't get me wrong. That's why I let you go so long. But it does sort of scare me a little bit. When I ask you, who's the number two on the team? It's either Al Horford, who's not exactly a big game guy or a take control guy, or, you know.
It's not Horford.
Or it's a kid.
It's a kid. Because, again, Horford can't create his own shot. You know, when Horford makes threes, it's because someone draws his defender and they kick it out to him and he makes it, which is great, don't get me wrong. For a big guy, especially, to be able to do that, there's value in that. But he's not big enough to play with his back to the basket and a big guy on him. He gets eaten up in there. So he's a little bit of a tweener. He's kind of a 4.5. And so I think that that's a problem. Tatum, Brown, they can create their own shots, and to me, that makes them a more viable option.
All right, the Felger Maz Facebook page, the Felger Maz Twitter feed, we'll send this out. Video of Maz. His reaction to Giancarlo Stanton homering on his first swing as a New York Yankee. That's online. We continue with your calls. We'll get to the Bruins as well here coming up, but we're mostly Patriots right now, Celtics. Whatever you want with your calls after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bruins going for first place tonight, Mass, against Tampa here at the Garden. You folks want to weigh in on the Bees? By all means. 617-779-0985. The phones are full, as usual. When someone jumps off, you can jump on. Is first place important to you if you're the Bruins?
Yes, it's important, absolutely. And look, I don't know that they're going to go out of their way for it or that they'll prioritize that over the health of their players. And ultimately, if a guy's not ready to play, you don't put him out there. Like, to me, that's obvious. But if it comes down to playing the fourth place team out of the other division instead of playing the Maple Leafs, I'm in. You can play the Devils, potentially, instead of the Leafs. I'm in. I absolutely would want that if I'm the Bruins.
And me too. And the more I think of it, I think it was a caller that said it yesterday that put it the best. And to me, this is how I started. I started like it shouldn't matter. If you think you're going to win the cup or you're going to be a real cup contender, then Toronto shouldn't scare you. You shouldn't want. If you think you can really win the cup, then Toronto's small potatoes. You're going to face teams much better than that. So that was my initial, you know, thought process. Don't be afraid of the Leafs if you think you're a Stanley Cup team. However, I don't think the Bruins are so much better than everybody else that the road isn't going to matter. The road's going to matter. And if you can face a Metropolitan team and knock Tampa down, then Tampa has to go to Toronto first, and then you. There's a chance Toronto knocks off Tampa.
Sure there is.
That's not a out-of-reach series for Tampa or Toronto. So, you know, it's a harder road. The road for the Bruins to go Toronto-Tampa, points-wise, those are the top three teams in the league. You, Toronto, Tampa have the three most points in the conference. I mean, if you could get those two to knock each other off before they get to you, that's better than you having to take that road, go Toronto, then Tampa. So it's really about the road as much as anything. Let Tampa and Toronto, you know, bash each other's brains in for the first 2 weeks while you're playing New Jersey.
Well, and especially in that league, right, because we've seen it before. By the time you get to the third or fourth round, the conference final, and then the Stanley Cup final, guys are just beat up. I mean, to survive those 22 games or whatever it is that you're going to end up playing, you know, and I think 1 year the Bruins actually played 25, right? They had 3 7-game series,
right,
you remember, in 2011.
Yeah, the year they won.
When they won the Cup, they had the sweep over Philly, but everything else went 7. So, like, 25 games at that intensity and that pace, you need a lamb in there. And I say lamb, relatively speaking. There are no lambs in the NHL playoffs. But if you can do it that way, no question. Absolutely. To me, that should be a priority again, assuming you're not putting anyone at risk. So, like, let's use Nash, for example, Rick Nash. And we all believe that, you know, there's a concussion issue there and that he's not anywhere close. If Rick Nash is on the bubble, no, you don't put him in. You can't risk that. But if Nash is ready to go, get him in there. You need him. You got to get first place.
I'm not particularly scared of any of these teams, believe it or not. And even Tampa, this is why I'm so interested in tonight's game, because the last one had a playoff feel. And in the third period of that game, the Bruins kind of bullied them. And I don't know. I just feel like, you know, they have that kind of advantage over this team, at least based on that last game a couple of Saturdays ago. The only team I do have a tiny concern about is if they end up, you know, taking over first place and they have to play New Jersey in that first round, they're going to be looking for revenge on Brad Marchand for what he did to Marcus Johansson.
Okay, well, get ready for that. That's going to be every night as we go
forward.
But
them more than anybody else. I mean, him just speaking out about that hit now that he's skating again a couple of days ago, like, you know that they'd be looking for revenge on him.
Okay, so is Chara coming back tonight?
No,
Chara's not playing. Backus is playing.
Backus is back. Chara's close. McAvoy's getting close. Like, they're all coming back, except for Nash. And again, that DuPont thing still just stands out from the other day as Nash played his final game as a Boston Bruin. I guess Cassidy said something today about him working out on his own. I thought I heard Jaffe say that. I don't need the sound, Jimmy. Oh, you do? All right, go ahead. Yeah, play the cut.
I think so. I mean, the guys that are skating should be ready. Rick's not, so until he's on the ice, you know, we'll see. But the rest of the guys, I anticipate, yeah, we'll leave it at that. You know, when he gets back on the ice, then we'll be able to better judge whether he makes it in the playoffs.
Okay, so that was on Nash. I thought Jaffe said something to the effect of Nash has been working out on his own.
Well, I'll tell you what, if he is doing that, that's a good sign.
So, but, like, don't even take, maybe I misheard, you know me. Like, I hear things, so don't even take that to the bank. But Nash is the one that concerns me. They need him.
It should concern you. I mean, again, you know, typically with those concussions, there's increased activity as you go, and then they gauge how you respond, right? And so if it's at a point where he's on a bike or a treadmill, well, that's a good sign. They're working
absolutely.
Yeah, they're working up to skating. And so, because I think, look, given the video that's out there that Paquette hit on him in the Tampa Bay game, and then the rumors out there about what it could be, to me it feels like a concussion. Okay, feels like a concussion. And if they're ramping up activity even slightly, then maybe that DuPont story isn't quite as severe as we thought the other day.
Okay, I think they need him. I think to me he's important in terms of Ryan Donato. If you want Ryan Donato out there with David Krejci, you need size on that line. And it just sort of Donato, Krejci, Heinen, there's just not enough. You saw it the other night. You know, the team can get muscle. The team can be a little undersized at times, and certainly Winnipeg's huge. You know, there's few teams in the league that are that big, but I still think just Krejci with that kind of size player has always worked, and Donato's got a little more space, and that just sort of, I think if you want Donato up with Krejci, Nash being there is really important. And so, you know, first place is right there, though. They're a game, they're 1 point behind Tampa, and they have a game in hand. It's head-to-head. They have 2 head-to-head games against Tampa, so it's right there. They've always matched up well against Tampa. Doesn't Tampa have some injuries? Is Stamkos out?
Last I saw, yeah, I think he's going to be a game-time decision.
So, I thought I saw Stamkos wasn't playing, too. Yeah, but maybe you're right. Maybe he's game-time.
So they're battling some injuries as well, so it's right there for you. Should be a good night in a season where they've had a lot of good nights. And so the Bruins going for first place tonight in the Atlantic. We'll break it there and get to your phones on everything that we've hit on today in our long commercial-free segment next.
This is Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger and Mazz.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
We've had some challenges. The guys have done a tremendous job. The coaches' staff has prepared each and every player every night. We've had the next man up attitude, but we will look forward to getting our full lineup together and having everybody back and hopefully before the end of the season.
I don't know if Sweeney was just talking,
generically,
right, or he was really referring to Rick Nash. We'll find out. So Bruins on the board with everything else. We've done a lot of Patriots today. Eric in New Hampshire, what are your thoughts? Hello, Eric.
You're a hypocrite. Felger, you're a hypocrite.
Okay, how so?
I called you last week and told you why they traded Garoppolo, because Belichick thought that Brady was going to hang on. Brady was going to crash, and that's why he tried to hang on to Garoppolo as long as he had. And then 20 minutes ago, you just said that's why they drafted Garoppolo, because he thought that Brady was going to, was going to crash and not be the quarterback that he showed himself to be this past season.
I'm not really sure what you're talking about. Of course Belichick hung on to Garoppolo this long because he thought he would have a chance to go to him. Of course he did, and then the owner made him trade him. And that's what happened.
No, Belichick traded Garoppolo because he thought, he held on to Garoppolo and didn't send him off to Cleveland before the draft because he thought that Brady wasn't going to be the player he was. That's why he held on to him.
So I'm not sure about that. Okay. So listen, Eric, I think that, I don't believe that. You thought Belichick Brady was going to fall off the map this season?
Last season, yeah. That's why he held on to him and he didn't trade him, before the season started.
See, I don't think so. By the time you got to this year, I've shut up about the Brady decline thing because his plays improved the last couple of years. I mean, I'm sorry. The whole thing of the Patriots looking at quarterbacks in 2014 just lines up perfectly with our commentary. I think Brady was on the slight decline there through his mid-30s. And Bill obviously agreed because in 2014, not only did he draft Garoppolo, but as we learned today, he brought in Manziel to Foxborough and Teddy Bridgewater. He looked at all these quarterbacks. So they saw something too. Now, when you get to this past offseason, I do not buy the line of thought that Belichick was hanging on to Manziel because he thought Brady would suck in the first half and that would give him the reason to trade Brady and move to Garoppolo. That wasn't going to happen. And if he thought that's stupid. I mean, in 2014, when you want to look at the big picture and the long arc of Brady's career and say, he could have some more trouble here down the line, yes. But did you think Brady was going to fall off the map in the first half of 2017?
No, probably not. Unlike you, though.
Of course not.
No, but unlike you, I thought there was a chance that it could happen. You thought no chance. But independent of that, I look at it and say, if Belichick knew he couldn't sign and keep Garoppolo, he'd have dealt him at the draft. He thought he could keep him.
Yes.
One way or another, he thought somehow, some way, he was going to be able to keep him. Whether that means signing him, franchising him, I have no idea. Okay? But I'm telling you, Belichick would not have put himself in a spot where halfway through the season he had to dump Jimmy G for a second rounder if he could have gotten two firsts for him in April.
I mean, again, that Lombardi sound today was, really interesting. Talking about Manziel coming back to the league and, Lombardi said when we were in New England, we brought in Manziel and Garoppolo together. And Manziel had a good visit. And what happened in Cleveland wasn't about his ability as a football player. It was all the off-field stuff. But just the revelation that the Pats brought in Johnny Manziel. If we knew in 2014 that the Patriots had brought in Johnny Manziel for a visit. Oh, brother.
The writing's on the wall.
Oh.
Brady's done. Bill thinks Brady's done.
Oh, just getting fat off of that one little nugget of information. It just would have been glorious.
Well, and remember, too.
Like a pig in poop, Felger and Mazz would have been, Mark. And to find out that they also brought in Teddy Bridgewater. We would add those things up, as we should, and say, Belichick's getting ready. Belichick's getting ready to make the move. Bell agrees with us. It's decline, baby. Brady's in decline 2-6 show. So, Belichick agreed with us, big boy.
So it just speaks further to, I'm sorry to cut you off, but
go
further to what Belichick said at the when they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. We all know Tom's age and contract status.
Bill was ready back then. And Brady, Brady shut him up. He shut us all up. Brady went in the other direction.
Brady answered.
Yeah, he answered. Yes, and he shut up Belichick. Oh, you think I'm done? You want to draft the next guy? You want to bring in this jack wagon? You're looking at Johnny Manziel, Bill, really? And Brady went out and showed him. So, you know, great, neat. But now you hear now you're 4 years later, and if Lombardi's right and Manziel had a good visit and they liked him then, he's on the table now.
So here's what I would love to know, because the Patriots had the 29th pick. Again, they took Dominique Easley, and Manziel went 22nd. If Manziel had slid, would they have taken him? Like, would they have taken him ahead of Garoppolo?
Oh,
like, that's what I would love to know. And if Lombardi has a clue on how to do a podcast, that's what he'll tell us in the next installment.
John in Providence on Manziel. Go, John.
Hi. I think that it's a lock that he's going to be a Patriot, and I would love to see him in the preseason play, being a very entertaining thing. And another thing is, I think that they're going to try to go get OBJ to leverage against Gronkowski, because he's another, like, superstar factor guy.
All right, I'm just going to stop you. It's not much leverage when Odell Beckham has 1 year left on his contract. So you don't have much leverage there in that situation. You have to pay through the nose for Gronk or Odell Beckham. That's not how you leverage Gronk, by drafting the next guy.
I was just going to say that. I mean, that's the way you leverage Gronk. You get his replacement. And then you bring him in, and if he can play, you say, Gronk, we're good, pal. You had 10 touchdowns as a rookie. What makes you think that this kid can't? Like, that's how you do it.
We've got Kevin in Walpole with a Bruins thought. We'll jump him here because we're talking some bees. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hey, I just wanted to throw a plug in for Kevin Miller, feeling like he's much improved this year. And last year when they were talking about having to protect guys for the expansion draft, his name and Riley Smith's name kept coming up, and everybody, me included, kind of felt like they got that wrong. But I feel like he's had a pretty solid year. He seems like his skating is better, his puck management is better. He was wearing the A when Bergeron was out. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
So he's been good. I don't want to take anything away from him. But to say that they still got that right, letting Colin Miller go and protecting Kevin Miller, you know who's been awesome this year for a first-place team wire-to-wire? Colin Miller. Colin Miller, I was reading the other day, he and his D pair have the, you know, and again, I only use this stat if it fortifies an argument of mine, but Fluto was writing about Colin Miller and whoever he's playing with out in Vegas having the best Corsi among a defense pair in the league. Colin Miller has 39 points. He's a plus two on a team that's been top five team in the league wire to wire. So he's basically he's more than a half a point game guy. 39 points in 77 games is, that might be better than Krug.
No, I think Krug's a little higher because Krug's in the 50s in terms of points. And but he's about half point a game, and he's playing almost 20 minutes a night. Colin Miller is.
Colin Miller has become, or you know, and I don't watch him, so this is purely on the numbers, but he's a top 4D there, plays 20 minutes a night, scores over half a point a game. He's everything that I thought he would be, statistically. Again, I don't watch him. And he's cheaper than Kevin Miller and like 7 years younger than Kevin Miller. So, I'm sorry. I'm still protecting Colin Miller there.
And he's what? He's 25 years old?
Yeah, I was just going to say, well, I said he's 7 years younger than Kevin Miller. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but he's younger. He's younger than Kevin. So younger, cheaper, and I still think he has more upside. But that's taking nothing away from Kevin Miller. He's been great this year. He's been great. And they certainly haven't lost anything. So, like, I don't say they got it wrong because they're about to be the first-place team in the conference, and Kevin Miller's been a big part of it. It's just letting Colin Miller go still hurts. I'm sorry. If you were listening or watching earlier, Giancarlo Stanton hit a home run on his first Yankee swing, and Maz reacted well, quite dramatically to it. Josh in Somerville has a thought. Go ahead.
Enthusiastic.
Hey, first time long time. Hey, guys. So I'm watching this silly loop of Maz jumping up and down like an idiot, celebrating this the Stan homer. Maz, you asked the question, how many years are the Sox going to regret this one for? I would argue the flip side of that question would be, how many of the 13 years they signed him for are the Yankees going to regret this for ultimately? Weren't people asking this same question after we lost the so-called A-Rod sweepstakes? And I'm pretty sure the Yankees weren't exactly loving the final few years of that quarter-billion contract. Wouldn't you say, Maz?
Well, first of all, Josh, the Yankees could have gotten out after row 7, and then they re-signed him, right?
Fair enough.
So it ended up only being a 4-year commitment. But that aside, and you can look this up, I was anti-A-Rod.
I will.
I didn't want the Red Sox to get A-Rod, and you can look it up. Okay, this guy?
I'm similar in the sense that we're talking about a back end of a deal that's not going to be very fortuitous for the other team.
Sure. If you want to say the contract is an albatross, absolutely. And I would tell you that I'd still take Stanton over J.D. Martinez. I would take him. 10 years, $275 million or whatever the number was. I'd have taken the whole amount, and I'd put him in the middle of that line. And we'd be talking about the Red Sox on opening day if that were the case. I could guarantee you that.
Okay, we've got all this football stuff, continuing rumor mongering on Patriots and Brady and Belichick. The things that you're hearing is that nothing has been resolved, that the tensions between those folks are just as high as they've ever been. Honestly, that's the word. And, you know, Curran and Bedard's reporting sort of reflects that. Johnny Manziel still on the table for the New England Patriots. And again, that great revelation today by Michael Lombardi that Manziel actually came here on a visit in 2014 with Teddy Bridgewater as well. So the Pats were not just looking at quarterbacks in 14, they were going hard at the quarterback position in 2014. That's on the table. The new helmet rule Murray hates. I got some calls on that. I promise I'll get to them. Odell Beckham, you want him, etc. Bruins going for first place tonight. We still have that great Celtics win from last night. All of this stuff on the table with your calls, I promise, right after Murray's update.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.